Can you hear me? Can you hear me all right? Yeah. So welcome to this afternoon's session of this Newcastle Stop the War conference. We're going to have a session now till about 2:15, and then we'll have just 5 minutes break, and then we'll get into the final session, which is on Iraq and the bloody legacy of the war on terror. But for this session, we've got two speakers. We've got Roger Nettleship, who is the current president of Newcastle Stop the War, and is a founding member of what was Tyneside Stop the War back in the day, back in the when we were all campaigning over the Iraq War. And we've also got Martin Levy, who's the president of Newcastle TUC, and they're going to speak on. I think Martin's going to speak on the Lucas Plan, which I'll be interested in. I know a little bit about it, but not enough, so that we'll find out about that. But maybe take you first, Roger. Roger's going to speak on. Is Martin going to go first? Okay. And you're going to speak on the alternatives to an arms economy or a militarised economy.
Britain today and yesterday, war's workshop.
Yeah. World. Okay, great. So Martin, Martin's going to speak for about 20 minutes, and then Roger for about maybe 10, and then we'll have time for some questions and discussion. So Martin, do you want to?
Right. Does anybody need me to use the microphone? Can you hear, Dave?
I'm alright.
Okay, you can hear me, right? Okay. So thanks for the invitation. Do you want me to use the mic?
We'll use the mic for the floor then.
So anyway, thanks for the invitation. I suspect that there's some people here who won't have heard of Lucas Aerospace, let alone the 1976 alternative corporate plan produced by the Lucas Aerospace Combined Shop Stewards Committee. That's nearly 50 years ago, of course. I was actually in Birmingham at the time that the plan was being developed. But I didn't have any direct connection with it, and my connection is not even second-hand, it's really third-hand. I've relied a lot on the book, The Lucas Plan, A New Trade Unionism in the Making, written by Hilary Wainwright and David Allerton. Hilary spoke to a lot of the shop stewards who were involved. So Lucas Aerospace was formed in the late 1960s as a result of a government grant to Lucas to buy a number of aerospace companies. It was at that time Europe's largest designer and manufacturer of aircraft systems and equipment, including fuel systems, flying control instrumentation, and electrical equipment. It had been involved with work on Concorde, the Soviet Tu-144 supersonic airliner, the A300B Airbus, the Lockheed TriStar, the RB211, the Anglo-French Jaguar, the European multi-role combat aircraft, and the Stingray missile system. So you can see that there's a mixture there, civilian and military projects that it was involved in. About 43% of its business was related to military work and 7% to other defence work. Approximately 45% of its work came from Rolls-Royce and 27% directly from the Ministry of Defence. The division at the time employed 18,000 highly skilled manual and staff workers at 15 factories across 11 geographical sites throughout Britain. There were 12 individual manual and staff unions represented in shop stewards committees at the different plants. But initially no overall umbrella organisation within the grassroots trade union structure to raise issues of common concern affecting all workers, such as pensions, employment levels or investment policy. And that was in stark contrast to the management, which obviously had been organised centrally, could dictate corporate policies at will. It could play one plant off against another. And it was in these circumstances that in 1968 a decision was made to form a combined shop stewards committee representing all Lucas Aerospace workers. From small beginnings, the combine grew in strength. It actually proved itself. Between 1972 and 1975, it was involved in several campaigns, in particular a Burnley parity strike for parity with other plants, a campaign against redundancies, and a highly successful campaign around the Lucas Industries new pension scheme, which cost the company quite a lot of money, by the way. And that gave the combine a strong base and expertise when it came to developing the alternative economic plan. Now, following a period of expansion, in 1974, the company announced the need to restructure as a consequence of what is called increased international competition and technological change brought about by the need to introduce new technology. That meant swingeing job losses, as far as the workers were concerned. And while militant defensive campaigns had had some success, the number of workers still fell, and the Combine felt that a policy on redundancy was essential. The idea of the alternative corporate plan came about as a result of a meeting held with Tony Benn at the Department of Industry in November 1974, at which there were 34 Combine delegates present. They wanted to persuade him to include Lucas Aerospace in the government's plans for nationalisation of the aerospace industry. Benn said that he didn't have the power to do that, but he suggested the Combine that they should go away and draw up alternative corporate strategy for the company. And that started the process which resulted in the Combine drawing up the plan. It was proposed to the company in October 1975. It involved four interlocking elements: a documentation of the productive resources of Lucas Aerospace, including the skills of the workforce; an analysis of the problems and needs facing workers in the company as a result of changes in the aerospace industry and the world economy; an assessment of the social needs which the available resources could meet; and detailed proposals about the products, the production process, and the employment development program which could contribute to meeting those needs. The underlying ethos was that if so much public money was going into the company, then the public should get a return out of it in terms of meeting social needs. But of course they wanted to save jobs too. Initially, they'd approached outside organisations for suggested products. They got only three replies, so they then circulated questionnaires to the workforce, requesting product suggestions which answered a social need and could be produced using the existing skills and plant technology. An emphasis was also put on the way that the products were to be made, making sure that the workers were not to be de-skilled in the process. They got 150 product ideas. From them, they selected products to fall into five categories: medical equipment, alternative energy technologies, including energy conservation, transport vehicles, improved braking systems, and oceanics, including what was called telecheric machines. That's machines that involve a hostile environment under remote control by an operator in a safe environment. We might think now of drones, which essentially are the same sort of thing. Specific proposals in the medical sector were an expansion of 40% in the production of kidney dialysis machines, which were at that time were being manufactured on one of the Lucas sites; artificial limb control systems; sight substituting aids for the blind, drawing on radar technology; the development of a vehicle to give mobility to children suffering from spina bifida; and manufacture an improved light support system for ambulances. The Combine regarded it, as this is a quote, as scandalous that people could be dying for the want of a kidney machine when those who could be producing them are facing the prospect of redundancy. In the energy sector, proposals included the development of heat pumps, solar cell technology, wind turbines, fuel cell technology, and the development of a flexible power pack for a wide range of purposes, particularly in the third world. This all may sound familiar, but remember, this was nearly 50 years ago. In transport, the plan proposed a new hybrid power pack for motor vehicles and road rail vehicles, and later the Combine produced a road rail bus which toured the country. Now, of course, the proposals were rejected out of hand by the management, indicating they would not diversify from aerospace work, even though they clearly indicated it was in decline, and despite the existence of marginal industrial and medical equipment already being carried out on some of the sites, which could be built upon. But the result was that redundancies were delayed. In the wider world, the Combine's alternative corporate plan received support from a multitude of organisations, including those who would not normally support trade union activity. Combine shop stewards attended numerous meetings in Britain and visited abroad to Sweden, Germany, Australia and the USA. In 1981, Mike Cooley, a senior member of the Combine, received the Right Livelihood Award, the money from which he donated to the committee. In addition, the Combine was successful in attracting funding from charitable bodies, which enabled it to set up the Centre for Alternative Industrial Systems in the North East London Polytechnic and the Unit for the Development of Alternative Products at Coventry Polytechnic. Now, while individual trade unions and the Labour government supported the plan in principle, there were at the time neither the structures in place nor the political will to put pressure on management to negotiate with the Combine to implement the plan. So an opportunity was lost to make a company receiving public money accountable to the community in which it served. Now, of course, Lucas Aerospace doesn't exist in its own right. Parts of it were sold off and other parts were closed down. Like other British-based manufacturing companies, it was a victim of poor, unaccountable management and a sad lack of successive governments' industrial strategy. But the plan, I think, was a key moment in demonstrating that workers can develop coherent industrial strategies quite different from those of their employers, and that there are alternatives to military production. It was largely motivated by the threat of job losses, and it, as I said, it did stave off redundancies, but it was led also by people with vision. Now, there were ramifications, knock-on effects. At Vickers plants on Tyneside and further afield, the ideas of the Lucas plan were taken up by the Vickers Combine Committee. Although this was almost entirely shop floor based, it didn't have the same number of technical office skills, and so that affected the type of alternative plan that they came up with. In 1975, the Defence Subcommittee of the Labour Party, NEC, had asked for the Vickers shop stewards to work with them on alternatives to the Chieftain tank. The stewards at Elswick discussed several alternatives with the subcommittee, including recycling plant, oil spillage pumps, small brewing systems and agricultural equipment for the Third World. These proposals were also used as part of the Vickers Combine's campaign against closures and redundancies, though again without being taken up by management. And we know that the Vickers plant has now gone. It's been replaced in a small way by Pearson, which in turn is owned by an Israeli company, and just last week there was a demonstration by Palestine Action at the use of that plant for purposes for the Israeli military. Shop stewards from Vickers also joined with colleagues in the local shipyards here to create the Tyne Shop Stewards Conference in order to discuss and make use of what were promised new policies from the then Labour government. A meeting in 1977, addressed by members of the Lucas Aerospace Combine, aroused interest among shop stewards in the power engineering industry. At Parsons, which is now Siemens, stewards had just won a campaign to bring forward the Braxby Power Station, guaranteeing employment temporarily. To secure jobs more long-term, the stewards became particularly interested in combined heat and power, and they worked with local tenants groups on the issue and became one of the mainstays of a national campaign. While stewards at Clark Chapman and Gates had developed a plan along the lines of the Lucas plan, and Clark Chapman, of course, is also gone. In the same year, Newcastle Trades Council, my Trades Council, first passed a motion recognising the wider relevance of the ideas behind the Lucas plan. Regular contact was maintained with the Combine Committee, and Parsons steward Bob Murdoch, who is still with us, was appointed to take special responsibility for the issues raised in the plan. In 1978, the Trades Council and the Socialist Centre organised a series of discussions on the wider relevance of workers' plans, of which several Lucas Aerospace workers spoke. That year, the City Council agreed to provide finance and resources to shop stewards' committees to carry out social audits of threatened closures and develop alternative proposals. While this was generally too late to build up effective resistance, the issue of workers' and users' control over product decisions gained support from some public sector trade unions too, particularly the National Union of Public Employees. When the shipyards were nationalised in 1977, the Vickers Yard in Barrow became part of British Shipbuilders. It comprised both shipbuilding and engineering, and up to 1970 it also had a cement division. After privatisation in 1986 as VSEL, the company took the decision to focus on its core business, which was with the Ministry of Defence. In 1987, the Barrow Alternative Employment Committee, as part of a campaign for alternative civil work to the construction of Trident submarines, produced a document, Oceans of Work, which put forward an ambitious plan to utilise the shipbuilding and engineering skills of the workforce, with particular emphasis on wave and offshore wind power systems. The VSEL management rejected proposals, stressing the company's military specialisms. Employment declined from 12,000 in 1987 to just over 3,000 in 2006, although it's currently about 10,000, is due to grow to 17,000 with the new submarines which are going to be built there. And this experience of the loss of jobs and then the creation of jobs on military projects has made it very difficult to win support for diversification among workers in the shipyard. Now, nearly 48 years on from the Lucas plan, the product ideas put forward by the Combine and other works of other groups of workers are now mainstream. On 26th of November 2016, a conference was held in Birmingham to mark the 40th anniversary of the plan. It was sponsored by a number of organisations, including Red Pepper, PCS, the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, Green Party, My Union UCU, Scientists for Global Responsibility, and others. The aim of the conference was to reopen the debate about industrial conversion and democracy, and it focused on the following topics: the Lucas Plan story and its relevance today, Trident and arms conversion, climate change, renewable energy and transition issues, alternative and local community plans, robotics, automation and the future of work, and practical ways to develop the Lucas plans of the future. working groups in the four areas of arms conversion, just transition, robotics and automation, and democratic local planning were established after the conference. On behalf of Newcastle TUC, I've been involved in what we call the Arms Conversion Defence Diversification Working Group, but I had to take a step away from that last year on health grounds, and in fact the working group hasn't met in the interim, although there are now plans to revive it. Through the Tyne and Wear County Association of Trade Union Councils, Newcastle Trades Council has pursued the issue of arms conversion defence diversification. A motion from the CATUC on defence jobs and diversification was not only agreed by the 2017 Trades Council's annual conference, but was sent as a single motion from that conference to the 2017 TUC Congress, where it was also agreed, albeit with opposition from the GMB and some other unions. The motion agreed that the 1975 Lucas Plan was an idea from which we can learn much today, and noted that 40 years afterwards we are facing a convergence of crises, militarism and nuclear weapons, climate chaos and the destruction of jobs by automation, which mean that we have to start thinking about technology as political as the Lucas Aerospace workers did. It called on trade unions and the TUC to lobby the Labour Party to establish before the next general election, which of course is now gone, a shadow defence diversification agency to work closely with the Shadow Department for Industry in developing an overall national industrial strategy, including the possibility of conversion of defence capacity. The first job of this agency, the motion said, would be to engage with plant representatives, trade unions representing workers in the defence industry, and local authorities to discuss their needs and capacities and to listen to their ideas so that practical plans can be drawn up for arms conversion while protecting skilled employment and pay levels. Newcastle Trades Council also donated towards the production cost of the film, The Plan That Came From the Bottom Up, the short version of which was shown at the 2018 National Trades Council's conference. And in November 2019, the Trades Council, the County Association and North East People's Assembly held a successful conference at the Unite building on John Dobson Street here on engineering for peace, jobs and climate justice. The conference focused on the four key areas already quoted, arms conversion or defence diversification, democratic local planning, just transition, Green New Deal, and robotics and automation. And it also included a screening of the short version of the film, The Plan. Plans for a follow-up and for a screen, the full film at the Tyneside Cinema, had, however, to be cancelled due to the COVID pandemic. The full film was finally shown at the Star and Shadow Cinema in 2022. So where are we now? I'm going to try and draw some things together here. Although Unite as Workers in the Defence Industries, its delegation supported the 2017 Congress motion on the Lucas Plan, and in May 2016, under Len McCluskey, the union had produced a defence diversification revisited paper, which set out the objective of defending members' jobs while at the same time urging government funding for diversification, and stated clearly that legislation is needed to create a statutory duty on the Ministry of Defence and its suppliers to consider diversification. Without legislation, history tells us that voluntary mechanisms do not work, as defence companies are unwilling to take the risk of entering new or adjacent markets. And it also said that defence diversification was clearly a long-term project and wouldn't affect the workers at Barrow. And it's this threat of the loss of skilled, well-paid jobs, which is very much behind resistance by GMB to diversification, and Unite is looking over its shoulder at the potential for GMB poaching its members. And in fact, at a meeting in 2021, organised by the Nuclear Education Trust, Andy Brown, Unite convener at the Fast Lane submarine base, pointed out that thousands of jobs are involved with Trident, the successor programme, directly and indirectly, and in the remote location of, the base, of that base meant that there was little economic justification bringing alternative employment there. And he said a key part of the discussion had to be putting workers and communities first, and cast iron guarantees of job security were needed. The TUC sat under 2017 motion, largely because of the opposition by the GMB. The plan for defence diversification agencies is off the table now because Labour didn't win the 2019 general election. And it's perhaps not surprising that in March 2021, in response to the government's integrated defence review, Unite Assistant General Secretary of Manufacturing Steve Turner said, "The defence of the nation must be linked with the defence of our national economy and the retention of the UK's ability and freedom to operate independently, whether on land, at sea, in line, in the air or online." And you can see from that there was a basis for Unite supporting the motion that carried the TUC last year. But we do know that the alternatives can be done. Many organisations have produced papers on this, including the CND and the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, for alternative production. And climate change is arguably a much greater emergency than any other we've faced, including war. So can promotion of the ideas of the Lucas Plan help build the movement for peace? I would say yes, but not in isolation. Such promotion is part of winning the political argument in the trade union movement, but it has to be embedded in an overall alternative economic, social, environmental and political strategy. And that strategy must include a new drive for general and comprehensive disarmament, beginning with the elimination of nuclear weapons and all other weapons of mass destruction, a rejection of British imperialism and NATO, and a just transition with worker involvement, not only for workers in carbon-intensive industries, but for those in the defence industry too. Thank you very much.